What's up, everybody? I am Roman Gennaro, back for another episode of Empire Sports Talk. This is probably going to be a shorter one. I just have a couple things I want to touch on, mainly the NFL draft. But before we get there, I do want to touch on a couple of things. First, the NBA playoffs are going on, and so I wanted to make a prediction here on this podcast as the first round is still underway. Several series, including Minnesota and Phoenix, and Denver and LA are 3-0, so those could end very soon. And I wanted to make a finals prediction right here. And I think after seeing the Timberwolves in game two against Phoenix, and I know that they won game three last night as this is being recorded on Saturday afternoon, but since they've gotten Karl-Anthony Towns back, I'm confident in saying that I believe they are the only team in the West that can truly match up with Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. I know that Rudy Gobert was once named the most overrated player in the league, or maybe not the most overrated player in the league, but overrated by NBA players. But I do believe he is one of the better defenders in the NBA. That's basically why he's in the NBA, his defense. And if there's anyone that can at the very least slow down Nikola Jokic, I do believe it's Rudy Gobert. I think things are clicking right now perfectly for Minnesota. Obviously, it's a big if they can slow down Denver. Maybe they can't, and in which case Denver makes it. But I think they can, and I think if they're it, I think they have a shot to make it to the NBA Finals. And in the East, I think there's a clear front runner with Giannis dealing with injuries and the Bucks not looking as great in the series against Indiana as maybe we thought they would. I don't see anybody taking down the Boston Celtics in the East, and I do think that it will be the youth and lack of playoff experience for Minnesota that does them in the finals, and I think Boston gets their championship. But that's just my prediction. I could see it very well going Denver, but I don't see anybody being able to slow down the Celtics in the East. I know that the Heat tied the series 1-1, but without Jimmy Butler, I don't see them having enough gas in the tank to finish out the series. And really, the only team that could possibly, I think, slow down Boston is Philadelphia if they make it out of the first round. Because I know Joel Embiid just dropped 50, but he's not 100% healthy. Some are arguing that his foul on Mitchell Robinson should have been a flagrant two and an ejection. I tend to agree with that. He fell to the ground and pulled Mitchell Robinson to the ground by his legs when Mitchell Robinson was in the air. Joel Embiid probably should have been ejected for that. He was not. The 76ers won game three, and Joel Embiid has promised that they will win the series. If they do, perhaps they could slow down Boston, but I don't see them beating Boston. Boston has been the best team in the NBA from start to finish all season. So my finals prediction at this moment on Saturday, April 27th, is Minnesota versus Boston in the NBA Finals, with Boston coming out on top. The next thing I want to talk about, and this very well could have led the podcast, it was arguably the biggest news of the week. Reggie Bush has finally had his Heisman Trophy reinstated by the NCAA and the Heisman Trust. This is something that should have happened a long time ago. Some would argue that he shouldn't have had it taken away in the first place, despite receiving gifts and cash from USC when he was a player, back when that was against the rules. And from the second that the NCAA started discussing name, image, and likeness years ago, people were like, what about Reggie Bush? Is he going to get his trophy back? Give him his trophy back. Give him his trophy back. Even after they enacted NIL, people were still saying, where's Reggie's trophy? It's legal now. Where is his trophy? And now we have an answer. The Heisman Trust and the NCAA announced it after they'd already given it back to him. They basically announced it with a picture that he has his trophy back. Reggie Bush is once again officially a Heisman winner. He was always a Heisman winner. You win a Heisman, you're always a Heisman winner. but he is officially a Heisman winner again. It's no longer vacated. Reggie Bush, to the delight and relief of many, once again has his Heisman trophy. One thing I do want to touch on is the investigation years ago said that he received a lot improper cash and gifts and things like that. One of the gifts that was listed, and the only reason I want to bring this up is because I think it's funny. One of the gifts that is listed as improper benefits was a limousine to take him to the 2005 Heisman ceremony. And I read that and I thought that the NCAA should be sending that limo. If you're a Heisman finalist, if you're going to the ceremony, the NCAA should send a limousine to pick you up. So I thought it was funny that that was listed as one of the improper gifts from USC, because I think that's the NCAA's job. But that's just me. Busted through the first couple of topics in just a few minutes here, because I want to spend the rest of the time on the NFL draft. Obviously, that first night, the first round, there were some surprises, but the top picks played out pretty much how we thought they would. And to me, the most interesting round was the second round, because I think this is one of the deepest drafts we've had in a long time, to the point where there were still a ton of high value, potentially first round talent draft picks in the second round. So that's what I want to, just a few things I want to touch on. And I'm going to touch on them by individual teams that raise my eyebrows the most. So first, we'll start with the obvious. There were six quarterbacks taken in the top 12. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniel, and Drake May going the top three as we expected. And then the first surprise came at, and possibly the biggest surprise of the entire draft, came at pick number eight with Michael Penix. We'll get to that in a second. And then J.J. McCarthy at 10 and Bo Nix at 12 to Denver, six quarterbacks in the top 12. There were 14 straight offensive players drafted to start the draft, with the first defensive player being edge rusher Latu to Indianapolis at 15. Broke the streak of 14 straight offensive players to start the draft. That is a draft record. Let's talk about what I said. The biggest surprise of the entire draft to this point, round four is going on live as we speak. So a lot of these notes are up to the moment, like round four. So we might do something else to talk about if there's anything of note in rounds five through seven. But first, I want to talk about Michael Penix going eight overall. This was a head scratcher to a lot of people, including me. Nothing against Michael Penix. I like Michael Penix. I think that Michael Penix should have been a first round quarterback. A lot of people thought he was a second round guy. And, there were a lot of factors to that. Injuries, age, and this plays into injuries, but the fact that he's been taking a lot of hits. Some people thought that his best football is already behind him because he has just taken such a beating in his college career. He's 24 years old as he's getting drafted. The question came when he was drafted eight overall to the Atlanta Falcons, just months after they signed Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million contract with $100 million guaranteed. The Atlanta Falcons are in a win now scenario. That's why they went and got six-time Pro Bowler, 35-year-old Kirk Cousins, and paid him all that money. They are in a win now scenario. And like I said, $100 million guaranteed to Kirk Cousins. I think there's an option after year two in Kirk's contract. So let's play it out. You bring in Michael Penix, who has a lot of injuries in his career. He's got two ACL tears behind him. He got beat up in the last game, in the last time we saw him in the NCAA championship against Michigan, and got beat up in the semifinal game as well. He's taken a lot of punishment in the last couple of games this season at Washington and in his college career. And so you're bringing in a guy, 24 years old, been beaten and bruised, months after signing your quarterback, the quarterback that's supposed to help you win in the moment, and you sign him to a 4-year contract. So assuming, because this is what it feels like to me and to a lot of people, assuming that the Falcons don't pick up Kirk Cousins' option after year two and hand the ball over to Michael Penix Jr., Michael Penix will be a 26-year-old first-year starting quarterback with two ACL repairs and a lot of miles on that car. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to go and get him at eight. Go and get him at eight because you're basically telling Kirk Cousins right away, we're not picking up year three and four. It reminds me of when the Browns drafted Brandon Whedon. Yeah, I think it was back in 2011. Brandon Whedon was a 28-year-old quarterback, and it was like, he's not sitting. We're starting him right away. And even though Michael Penix is 24, I feel like his body is a lot older than 24. If he starts at 26, that is like, it doesn't make sense to me in this draft position, in this moment, with what's happened in the offseason in Atlanta. They're in a win now mode, and they draft Michael Penix. And look, Michael Penix, I think, can be very good. And maybe it's that he reminds Atlanta of another former Michael they had at quarterback. Lefty, big, mobile, although Michael Penix isn't as mobile as he maybe once was. He might not be that much more mobile than Kirk Cousins. But that brings up another point is like if something happens to Kirk Cousins, if Kirk Cousins misses times with injury again this season, Michael Penix is a completely different quarterback than Kirk Cousins. So the offense you're building around Kirk Cousins is not going to work for Michael Penix. And the offense you'd have to build around for Michael Penix is not one that Kirk Cousins could just step back into and thrive. They could not be more opposite. And so this is a head scratcher for multiple reasons, one of which being that with that eighth pick, the Atlanta Falcons probably what they needed most was a pass rusher. That's probably what that or defense in general. That offense with a good quarterback, which they have in Kirk Cousins, could be humming. They've invested so much in that offense over the last few years with Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Kyle Pitts. And so the defense kind of needs to catch up. The defense is good. The defense is fine. The defense needs to catch up. And so pass rushing was one thing that they needed to address. And they eventually did. In the second round, they went and got, forgive me for butchering this name, Rook Okorokwo from Clemson as a pass rusher in the second round. But when I look at the fact that they drafted Michael Penix at eight overall and they drafted Rook at 35, I if they really liked Michael Penix that much, I truly believe that Michael Penix would have been there at 35. Michael Penix would have been in the house at 35. And you could have gone and gotten maybe a more high-profile pass rusher. I'm not saying Rook isn't good. He's from Clemson. He obviously pretty good, but I feel like you should address your main point of concern first before you go and get, let's be honest here, a project. And I know that term is it, there, that's a bit of a wink in NFL draft circles because when the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes, I believe they drafted him at 11 in the draft in 2017, in the 2017 draft, people were like, hey, it's a project. What are you doing? That's a reach. You know, because everybody likes to look back at that draft now and say, man, so and so drafted this player. Like the Bears drafted Mitchell Trubisky instead of Patrick Mahomes. Or the Bears drafted, or so and so drafted this person when they could have had Patrick Mahomes. It's like we say that now, but in the moment, nobody was like, oh, they could have had, they could go get Patrick Mahomes instead of Mitchell Trubisky at two. What they were saying was they should go and get. What I was saying was I thought like the Bears should trade, with the Texans and go get Deshaun Watson. And that's what a lot of people were saying because Deshaun Watson was the golden boy of that draft. And I think it's funny now that we've kind of done revisionist history and been like, oh, you could have had this guy instead of Patrick Mahomes. That's the thing about the draft. You're drafting these players based on college and based on what they've already done, not knowing how it's going to work. in the NFL. For every Tom Brady, for every Patrick Mahomes, there is a Josh Rosen. There's a Ryan Leaf. There is Jamarcus Russell. There are guys that just don't work. And it happens the same way with guys that, you know. So I think it's funny that looking back at the draft now, people are like, oh, how could you call Mahomes a project? Look at him. It's like nobody knew he was going to do that. Like, yeah, he had a big arm, but he was mostly compared to Brett Favre. Big arm, inaccurate, all this sort of stuff. And he got to the NFL, and all of a sudden, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. Nobody saw that coming. That's good coaching. That's getting better. We see Patrick Mahomes works extremely hard to get better every day, and he uses his baseball background to help him do it. Nobody saw Patrick Mahomes becoming what Patrick Mahomes became, and certainly not as fast as he did. And so, with that being said, you know, maybe. And so maybe this kind of reminds us of that. I'm not saying Michael Penix will beat Patrick Mahomes by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe the Falcons know something that the rest of us don't. We obviously know that Michael Penix is good, and Michael Penix is a little bit more high profile coming out of college than Patrick Mahomes was at Texas Tech. But maybe Michael Penix, maybe Atlanta knows something about Michael Penix that the rest of us don't. But at this moment in time, it looks like a reach. I really feel like Michael would have been there at 35, and that Atlanta could have done more with that eighth pick. The next team I want to talk about drafted a quarterback two picks later, a quarterback that Michael Penix faced in the NCAA championship, J.J. McCarthy. And I think it was a good pick. I think it was the worst kept secret in the league that J.J. McCarthy was going to end up on the Vikings. I think it's a good fit. I think they have the best receiving core in football, and I think it's going to work well. He also has Aaron Jones, because the big criticism of him in college was he wasn't asked to throw a lot, and that's because Jim Harbaugh likes to run the ball. They had Blake Corum, who, by the way, was drafted by the Rams in the middle rounds. And so the Vikings went and got Aaron Jones, and I think it's going to be the perfect situation for J.J. McCarthy. But what I want to talk about that pick is the bad business deal that the Vikings made to get it. And maybe there's something I'm missing about that trade. It does not make a lot of sense to me, and I'll tell you why. The Vikings originally had the 11th pick. The prevailing rumor was that the Vikings were going to move up to 5 with JJ's former college coach Jim Harbaugh's San Diego, or I did that a few weeks ago, and I did a whole podcast calling them the San Diego Chargers with Jim Harbaugh's LA Chargers and take him at 5. They didn't do that. The Chargers instead chose an offensive lineman. Not a bad deal when you just insured Justin Herbert for as much money as they have. And there was a rumor that the Vikings called the Chargers about Justin Herbert, which obviously the Chargers were never going to do given the massive contract he just signed. But what the Vikings did instead was trading up one spot with the Jets from 11 to 10 to take McCarthy. And what doesn't make and trades happen all the time, trading up, trading down, trading one pick, doing all these happen all the time. It happened a lot in this draft. But what's weird to me, what is very strange, was the fact that in order to move up one spot to get J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings also gave up a fourth round pick and a fifth round pick to move up one spot ahead of the Jets, who were not going to take a quarterback. And this trade was made when the Jets were on the clock. So it wasn't like somebody else was going to take. Like, the Jets were on the clock at 10. They obviously weren't going to take a quarterback because they have Aaron Rodgers. But the Vikings said, let's go up one slot, take J.J. McCarthy, give up two additional picks in the process, only getting a seventh back. And you could argue that even before this draft, if we had gone ahead and assumed Caleb Williams, which we did and it turned out to be correct. Even before the rest of the picks in the draft had been made, and we just assumed Caleb Williams, you could argue at this moment in time that the Vikings were the fourth best team in the NFC North. The Bears have a good defense. The Bears had improved their offense significantly around Caleb Williams before he even officially got there. Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift, like they had already done so much to go a long way to leapfrogging the Vikings, who had yet to pick an heir apparent to Kirk Cousins. We assumed it was going to be JJ McCarthy, but you don't know. As I said a couple weeks ago, I feel like all the pressure at this moment in time in the NFC North is on the Minnesota Vikings, who, yes, still have a good team, but until Thursday night didn't have a quarterback, and were maybe getting surpassed by the rest of the teams. And there have been rumblings this offseason that Justin Jefferson might want to go if things don't work out. And now they have JJ McCarthy. But if you are, if all the pressure's on you in your division, in probably the division where the rivalries are the most intense, that's crazy to say, considering, you know, the Steelers, Ravens, and the Eagles, and everyone in the NFC East. But all the pressure's on Minnesota. You go get a quarterback in the spot where you were gonna get a quarterback, then you trade away two of your picks, two of your later picks that you're probably gonna need to move up one spot with a team that wasn't a threat to you to take that player. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. It didn't make a lot of logistical sense. It didn't make a lot of business sense or monetary sense at all. They got their guy, more power to them. But as far as moving up one spot with a team that was not going to take the guy you wanted, because they ended up taking an offensive tackle and then giving away two other picks in the process and only getting one back, it's not like they gave away two picks and, like, it's not like they switched fourth and fifths with the Jets. They gave up the fourth and fifth and got a seventh. So it didn't make a lot of logistical sense to me. They could have gotten JJ McCarthy at 11 and given up nothing. And the reason that's significant is that when players like this are free agents, we've seen that GMs and owners can nickel and dime. And the reason I bring that up is that it's going to be 4 years before any of these guys are free agents. But the reason I bring that up is moving up into the top 10 to get JJ McCarthy instead of sitting at 11 is going to cost the Vikings roughly $1.3 million. Because in any of these drafts, the pick slot has a perceived value. A perceived monetary value is like, oh, if you're picked first, you can expect X amount of dollars. If you're picked eighth, you can expect X amount of dollars. And this goes for basically all slots. I don't think any other sport does it in the way that Major League Baseball does it, as far as pooling all that valued money together so you can end up paying somebody more or less or whatever. But in this instance, the 11th pick that the Vikings had before making this trade with the Jets was roughly 20 million. That was the slot value of the 11th pick. So under the collective bargaining agreement, NFL rookie contracts are fixed in terms of length, 4 years, and if you're a first round pick, you get a fifth year option. And that money is fully guaranteed. It's non-negotiable, at least for the first year, until the first year is completed. And each slot has a value. For instance, last year, CJ Stroud, as the number two overall pick, had a slot value at roughly at a little over 36 million, and ended up having a signing bonus of an additional 23 million on top of the $36 million contract he signed, all of which was fully guaranteed. So he's on this deal, he's making over a little over 9 million a year. So in this scenario, and maybe these teams aren't pinching pennies, and maybe they're okay with paying JJ McCarthy an extra $1.3 million of base salary. But that is the difference that exists because they moved up to 10. And it is fully guaranteed, which they have to sit with. Because as I said, the slot value for pick 11 is roughly $20 million, 20 million and change. I think there is a scale, depending on who's reporting on it, of 20 million to 20 and a half. And so roughly $20 million, as opposed to the 10th pick slot value, which is roughly 21 and a half. Again, that sliding range is somewhere between 21.3 and 21.8. So the Vikings have now committed an extra million and a half to JJ McCarthy by moving up one slot and giving away all these extra picks. I think it was a terrible move by Minnesota, but more power to them. JJ McCarthy is now officially a Minnesota Viking. The next team I want to talk about is their NFC North rival, Chicago Bears. There was no debate who Chicago was taking number one. That was Caleb Williams. The surprise to me came at pick number nine, where I thought that they should have taken a defensive player. Their defense was their strong point a year ago, but now with the moves they'd made in the offseason, DeAndre Swift, Keenan Allen, to pair with DJ Moore and Cole Kmet on offense, and now Caleb Williams, I thought suddenly their defense was their weak point. Not bad, just weaker than their offense. And so I thought, go get a pass rusher, go get a linebacker. Peyton Williams was on the board, who had first round talent, but injuries let him slide all the way to the third. We'll talk about that in a minute. I thought defense was the way to go. You have to pick that high. There are a ton of great defenders on the board. Look what Houston did last year, picking CJ Stroud number two and Will Anderson number three. They picked up captains on both sides of the ball in the top five picks. I thought Chicago could do something similar, and instead, it surprised me a little bit when they went and got Rome Odunze, the wide receiver from Washington. This by no means is a bad pick. Look, if you got a guy like Caleb Williams, you need weapons for a guy like Caleb Williams. And he has DJ Moore, he has Keenan Allen, but Keenan Allen is aging, so he'll likely slide into a wide receiver three. And if he doesn't get hurt, maybe he produces the way he has. Maybe Rome Odunze is a wide receiver three, but the number nine slot is a bit high for a wide receiver three. But I understand if a guy like Rome Odunze is on the board, you take a guy like Rome Odunze. There were three high profile guys, wide receivers at the top of the draft, and you could put them in any order you want, you'd probably be right. Marvin Harrison Jr., who had gone off the board at number four to Arizona, Malik Nabers, who had gone off the board at number six to the Giants, although many thought they should have gone quarterback in that spot because Daniel Jones isn't working out, and it doesn't really matter who you have at wide receiver if you don't have a quarterback that can get it to him. But the Giants like wide receivers. They like to stockpile wide receivers and then not have them get the ball. So that's what they did. But Rome Odunze was that third guy that you could put Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, and Marvin Harrison Jr. in a hat, pull one out, pick them in the slot where you need a wide receiver, and be happy. So from that standpoint, he's on the board. You go get him. And I get it. It's not the pick I would have made. I don't think it's a bad pick at all. But I was scratching my head a little bit when the Bears didn't have a second round pick. I assume that's because of the deal they made a year ago with the Panthers. And so their next pick wasn't until the third. They took an offensive tackle. I'm never going to argue against an offensive tackle, because when you got a quarterback, you got to, as much as you need somebody for the quarterback to throw to, you need to protect the quarterback. So an offensive tackle is always a good investment. Always. That's one of those positions where like you can never have too many offensive tackles because they're because offensive lines get hurt. We've seen several times in the last several years where teams have many different offensive line combinations over the year because over the years because they move people around and people get hurt and that kind of thing. So I'm never going to argue against an offensive tackle. And then in the fourth round, the Bears took a punter. It's like, okay, your needs were a quarterback, you got that. Your needs were a wide receiver, you got that, although probably not as big a need as an edge rusher or a player in the secondary. But you got your wide receiver. Cool, awesome. One of the best receiving corps in the NFL day one. And you got an offensive tackle, not going to argue. You got a high profile quarterback whose slot value, by the way, is around 38 million. He'll probably be making close to 60 when once he gets the signing bonus. You got to protect him. You just do. So I'm not going to argue against offensive tackle. Then you go get a punter. A punter. Like everybody's singing the Bears' praises about, oh, look how well they're turning around. They're pulling a Houston outside of having the perfect coach. They're pulling a Houston. They're doing it quickly and well. And then you get a punter in the fourth round when you need a linebacker, when you need a pass rusher, when you need secondary, when you need to shore up the other side of the ball to make sure that you can score points and stay out in front. The offense scores points, the defense keeps you out in front. So that fourth round pick is really a head scratcher. We'll have to see how they do in the last three rounds. But I thought they should have done a little bit more to shore up that defense. I don't dislike the Roma Dunze pick. I think if he's on the board, you take him. But I probably would have gone for the best defensive player available, considering that at nine, there were still all we were still in that stretch of all offensive players. So that was a bit concerning to me. But I still think they're doing really well. I still think they're building really well. Honestly, that better be the best punter in the history of the NFL. Fourth round pick when you need defense. That better be the best punter in the history of the NFL. The last team I want to touch on, specifically what they had to do, was Indianapolis. And if you've watched this podcast before, you know I'm probably a little biased toward Indianapolis, but I had a close eye on them, obviously, and so I'm going to talk about them. Their number one need this offseason, as was made evident by all the reports saying they needed to go after L'Jarius Sneed when he was franchise tagged by the Chiefs, and they didn't do it. They need secondary. They need corners. They need safeties. They gave up a lot of big plays a year ago. They had a good defense, but it could have been a lot better. They were 1 3-yard Tyler Goodson catch away from beating the Texans and getting to the playoffs, but their defense could have been a lot better. And they gave up a lot of big plays. They do have some talented. They do have some talent in the secondary. Kenny Moore obviously had a great year a year ago. Was Pro Bowler. Juju Brents, a talented young rookie who missed about half the year with injury. So you need to shore it up. It needs to be a little bit stronger. And then they went out with their first pick at 15. They drafted the first defensive player off the board with edge rusher Latu. I'm not going to try to butcher his first name the way I butchered the Falcons' second round pick's last name. Good pick. I think if he stays healthy, he'll be fine. But that's a big question because if I'm not mistaken, Latu at one point retired from football and was out of football for 2 years with an injury. And so that pick was a little questionable. Because there were players like Byron Murphy II, Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, still on the board. In fact, I think Byron Murphy went the next pick. I think he went 16 to Seattle, the next pick. And the overview on ESPN, the overview on the pick of Latu at 15 was, oh, I had Byron Murphy ranked higher than him. And Byron Murphy was an edge rusher or was a defensive lineman. Dallas Turner, an edge rusher. The same basic positions that they went and got Well, two, with less concern. And so that pick, I don't hate it. Welcome to Indianapolis. But you could have made a better selection for that same slot. Although I would have loved to see secondary. Then in the second round, which you could have called the secondary round because that was the round where all the safeties and corners came off the board in round two. In fact, at one point, Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Kamari Lassiter, and Max Melton, four straight corners were taken in the draft from picks 40, 43. This was the corner round. This was the round that I thought, okay, this is where Indianapolis goes and gets their most needed position. Indy was originally at 46, which, as I just said, would have been just a few picks after this string of corners. And then they traded down to 52. And my thought is maybe they did this. I could be wrong. This is my speculation. I think that the Colts were going to take one of those four corners. And then when that didn't happen, I do think there were still two really good corners on the board, as well as a couple of really good safeties. But the corners were Mike Sainer still, the standout at Michigan, and Enos Rakestraw Jr. from Missouri, were both on the board still. Indy traded down with Carolina at 46, so Sainer still would have still been on the board, as would have been Rakestraw Jr., who went 61 to the Lions, which is a big need for them as well. And instead, what Indianapolis did was, in my opinion, pick the one position I didn't feel like they needed, and that was wide receiver. They did say they wanted to get faster at that position, and they went and got Adonai Mitchell, who that's a first round talent still on the board in the second. From that standpoint, much like I said about Roma Dunze, who was there at nine, you take him. Adonai Mitchell out of Texas is one of those guys. Is he's there at 52, you take him. But the secondary was a bigger need, and there were really good options still on the board at 46 before you traded back to 52, and there was still a really good option on the board when you took Adonai Mitchell at 52, and that was Rakestraw. And so that was a question mark to me. That's the second round pick. I am left scratching my head. I hope that Adonai Mitchell is really good, but they just signed Michael Pittman. They have Josh Downs, who before injury was looking like Anthony Richardson's favorite target, and Alec Pierce, who had a down year a year ago, but he can catch, like his rookie year, he could catch anything. And so if Alec Pierce returns to his rookie form, they have three really good wide receivers. I think if you were going to take an offensive player, I would have liked them to see them take Brock Bowers. He had come off the board two picks before theirs in the first round. He was drafted 13th overall to the Raiders. But I would have liked to see them maybe trade up a couple spots and get him if you're going to address offense. I didn't think offense was where they were going to address. I didn't think it's what they needed to address. They did take offensive linemen in the third and the fourth. Because again, I'm not going to argue against offensive line when you've got a guy like Anthony Richardson who missed most of his rookie season with injury. Much like I said about Caleb Williams, you have a guy that good and that high profile and that needed, you protect him. And Indy's offensive line was often penalized. So maybe they're trying to revamp that offensive line. I get it. I'm never going to, as I'll say it a million times, I'm never going to second guess offensive line. But this is now four rounds where they have not addressed their need on defense. And I'm going to take a live look to make sure that's still the case, because I'm pretty sure it is. Hold, please. Taking a live look at round five, the Indianapolis took another wide receiver at pick 142 with Anthony Gould out of Oregon State. So they're still not addressing their biggest need, which is secondary. Unless they have something planned, they do have two more picks coming up in round five, thanks to trading down with Carolina. They have picks 151 and 155. So they do have a couple picks. They need to be picking defense. I don't know why they're not. It's driving me insane as we look live, but I don't want to spend all the time on them. So, but that's the last team I wanted to focus on. I wanted a couple other notes about the draft here for before we call it a day. Kansas City got the most need-specific value in the draft when they drafted Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver out of Texas, at 28. He is fast. Kansas City knows a little something about speed. He's no Tyreek Hill, but with the wide receiver issues that the Super Bowl champions had a year ago. I know that's a ridiculous thing to say considering they still managed to win the Super Bowl, but with the glaring wide receiver issues they had a year ago, I think this is one of the most important picks in the draft, pairing Xavier Worthy with the one standout on the receiving corps last year, Rashee Rice, could be the start of fixing their wide receiver woes from last year. Buffalo fills their much needed wide receiver gap by drafting FSU's Keon Coleman with the first pick in the second round. The standout wide receiver from Florida State is now going to have to fill the shoes of Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis, along with all the other departures that Buffalo had this offseason. But notably, their top two wide receivers walked out the door. They're bringing in Keon Coleman to help stop that bleeding. The next couple of picks is just fun here. Washington drafted Kansas State tight end Ben Sinnott with the 53rd overall pick, and I'll put a screenshot of the Twitter accounts on the screen. Go watch the videos. Ben Sinnott shared this video back in 2019, and then the Commanders and many others shared it on draft night. Ben Sinnott was a hockey player, and they showed a video of a hit he put on a poor unsuspecting soul in a hockey game, and I saw the hit and I thought that that young man had died. Ben Sinnott is he can hit. He is going to be on the Get Up Pancake segment for with Jeff Saturday next season. I guarantee you. This man, watch out. I am going to be keeping a close eye on Ben Sinnott in Washington this next year. He's one of the ones that I'm going to be keeping the closest eye on. Peyton Wilson, who I said had first round talent, was probably one of the best linebackers in this draft. He had some injury concerns, which let him slide all the way to the third round, where he was picked up by the Steelers, which is scary. The Steelers defense is already their calling card. It has always been their calling card. And Mike Tomlin just picked up maybe one of the best linebackers in the draft with Peyton Wilson. If he can stay healthy, paired with J.J. Watt on the front seven, holy smokes. And then going back to Washington, who many are picking as a surprise winner of the division. They've done a lot to improve. Dan Quinn is their new head coach. I'm still surprised he got a head coaching job after the job he did against Green Bay in the playoffs last year. But Dan Quinn is their new head coach. They've done a lot of work to improve that team in just a single offseason. They obviously picked up Jaden Daniel. They signed Austin Ekeler, and they went and they got, as I said, Ben Sinnott. Now they've got also in the third round they drafted Christian McCaffrey's brother Luke, who played wide receiver at Rice. And so Luke McCaffrey better keep his head up on the field so that he does not end up colliding with Ben Sinnott and hurting himself. But as I said, Washington is a sleeper pick in the NFC East, and they've added some weapons here in the draft and this offseason. That is all I have for you. I'm going to keep an eye on the draft as it continues to roll on. But, oh, and there it is. One more live note. The Colts at 151 finally address their secondary issues by picking the safety Jalen Carlisle from Missouri, 6'3", 227 safety. I can sleep at night now. But that is all I have for you on this edition of Empire Sports Talk. I am Roman Gennaro. It's a good day to go 1-0, and I'll see you next time.